Hello, Tony. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. But with this mild weather,
I know.
Not sure whether I'm coming or going with that one at the moment.
Well, it's extraordinary. I did prefer it the other week when we had some cold bits, and you know, you actually get to wear the cold clothing that you have in your wardrobe. But I mean, now, I mean, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, the stuff that's catching the moths came out and has gone away as quickly as it came out.
Absolutely.
Has. Yeah, it is actually reasonably good for taking your dog out at the moment. Of course, you know, you haven't got to worry too much about freezing. And the dog's paws getting too cold, although the dogs actually love the snow and things like that. But there's not too much to worry about. It's just a bit of mud. So it's a case of hose the dog down when you get back, I think, isn't it?
Yes, and it's drying up, which is nice. So having said that, I'm sure the forecast, as soon as we finish today, the forecast will be heavy everything coming your way in the southeast.
I think so. And talking about letting the dogs out, of course, there's new legislation just come in, and we've avoided talking about this on the programme for some time now, but I don't think we can anymore because the legislation about XL bullies has just come into force, hasn't it?
But it has, hasn't it, at the beginning of the end of last month. It's been going on for a few months now, hasn't it? And I think they just keep adding extra stamps. And the other thing is when you hear it on the soaps, and in particular on the Archers, when you hear somebody's being attacked by a dog, you think, oh, blimey, it's very serious now when stories like this have reached the soaps. But,
don't you not find, though, when you get stories like that cross over into the realms of supposed entertainment, I mean, all the soap operas do this. Does it not rather magnify the problem in the wrong direction? Because there are many people here who think, including, some of the vets at the RSPCA, actually thinking that this legislation is not quite right. There's so many people who are upset about having to put a muzzle on their dog because their dogs have been trained and brought up properly. And that the focus of the legislation has not been where it should have been, which is on the breeders and on the people just getting these dogs for a fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it enrages me because it's not about a breed of dogs. It is about a set of measurements. And how can you do that? Because I know a couple of people who've got two dogs. A dog each from the same litter. One of them falls under the heading of the measurements, and the other one doesn't. And they're sisters. So how on earth? They're older ladies. They're highly trained. There is no drama with them. But according to the law, one of them should have a certificate. They should go through that channel, and the other one shouldn't. I mean, it is absolute madness. And we've had couple of people that have come to class, and their dogs have absolutely been top of the game. They've won all the games we've done. They've really surpassed themselves, and they've been told, and this was a few years back, so they're probably 4 or 5 years old now, and they've been told, their vets have recommended that they go and get all the things, the exemption form and everything that they need. And it's madness. And one of them, I know him in point of fact, doesn't actually have all these tricky breeds in it, but the way it's popped out and turned, you know, the way it's grown, it's come under those measurements. I just think it's accidents waiting to happen. It's not, the whole point is it's about the people, which is what you said a minute ago. It's trying to enforce the law to stop the people doing what they're doing. Well, those people are beyond the law as far as they're concerned. But it's the other people. It's like most laws. It's the others.
The ones
that
sitting
suffer
on the edges.
Yeah, we're the ones that suffer.
Yeah.
And our poor pets that were never ever going to be used as weapons. And these people, if they've got a dog, they're not going to muzzle. They're not going to do any of those things. And if they've gone beyond their uses, they'll either shoot them, drown them, chuck them on the motorway. What do you want? They won't do anything legal with them. They just get another one.
It's fairly shocking, isn't it?
It is shocking. And the fact when there's even information to say that if you've got one of these dogs and it falls under these statistics and you're worried by it, you can have it put to sleep and there's a compensation scheme. I mean, that is appalling. Plus the fact, I've heard that It's the worst bit of a vet's job to put a dog to sleep. Yeah. It's the worst bit. They want to cure vets.
Well, I've had to experience that myself, and it's a horrible, shocking thing. But can I just ask you there, is this legislation actually just aimed at XL bullies, or are there sort of other connected breeds to this that are affected by this legislation?
Well, obviously, it depends. I mean, there is the XL bully, which is, there's no such thing as an XL bully other than the breed type. So it's got you know, a bulldog type in it. But there are other breed types as well, which is, it's the Brasilia, I forget what they, the Fila. There's the Japanese Tozer. There's that one. There are some breed types in particular, but the majority of it is statistics.
Yeah. So isn't the problem actually then really something that should be looked at the breed stage, because these dogs have to be bred from somewhere, and isn't it, if the legislation on the breeders was tightened up. And again, the legislation tightened up about who you sell to, because once upon a time we had a dog licensing scheme, and everybody thought, oh, that was kind of silly, really. Why do you need a license to have a dog? Well, I mean, it would turn out that when you've got breeds that are capable of what these dogs are capable of, if put in the wrong hands, then a licensing thing would be rather a good thing, I would have thought, wouldn't you?
Well, it would be, but the other thing is, I suppose what they were hoping, that the chipping of dogs was going to fall under the same sort of thing as the licensing, so everybody knew where the dogs were and who the owners were. And again, I think it's that thing, if people go under the radar because of what they do with their dogs, they're always going to do it, aren't they? And you and I both know, we've both got rescue dogs from the same rescue place, and that particular rescue place is synonymous with dogs coming from puppy farms where they've been bred.
I hate to single out the Welsh for this one, but this is a rescue centre in Wales every dog literally has been an ex-breed dog come from a breeder. And in amongst all of those bits and pieces are some pretty strange combinations as well, because you've got breeders trying out the next thing. We've had all the Labradoodles and all that sort of thing. And I've got here, how we came to get him, I don't know, because we went looking for either a Labrador or a Boxer and came away with a Boxer stroke Whippet. And it's the most odd combination. And you were talking earlier off air with me about their breeders in the same part of the world having... using boxers and I think you said cavalier, springers or spaniels.
Cockers.
And you think this is...
Cocker box. Yeah.
It's a very, very strange thing. I mean, it seems to be the fashion to try and mix up breeds, and really it shouldn't be a fashion item at all.
No, I mean, the breeds have become breeds over the years because to do a job, and they've been sort of a bit like cars. They've all been adapted to go off-road, on-road, be fast, be, you know, utilitarian, put thousands of children and dogs in, or be sporty, etc.
There's a lot of research goes on there. I'm just wondering where the research is with a lot of these breeders. You think, oh, I know, let's cross this with that. And you think, they have no idea of what the end result's going to be.
No, that's the point. So the point is, over the years, there used to be thought put into it because they wanted these particular dogs to do a job. And that's, you know, it's all about crufts and it's all about this and that. However, now it just seems to be, it's about fancy. It's a flight of fancy. I'm going to cross that with that, call it a funny name. And they're actually, half of them are breeding push-me-pull-yous because... Mm. It is mad, and some of the there's just conflicting DNA you're getting.
Yeah.
I mean, on the other hand, having said that, the good old-fashioned mongrel that was bred and bred and bred and bred are nice. They are nice little dogs. But these, what we're seeing, are not mongrels. They are pure breeds that are probably overbred to start with, and then crossed with other pure breeds that are overbred. So ultimately, you either get dwarfism, which is what you got with your boxer, which is what they were probably heading for.
Well, they wanted to miniaturise a boxer, and they succeeded in that. But what they didn't take into account was his natural exuberance of a boxer mixed up with the natural of a whippet. The
joie de vivre. There you go.
No, it's not joie de vivre with a whippet. It's more what's the word? Caution.
Yeah.
So you put these two things together and you get, it's a very difficult job to train, I can say. But he's turning out okay now, but he's nearly five now. But the problem, the point I'm trying to make here really is with these breeders, go back to the situation with the XL bullies, that if there was much more control exerted over the breeders, how they breed, who they sell to and why they sell and all the rest of it, some of these situations wouldn't arise, would they?
No, they wouldn't. But sadly, I suppose it's like anything, isn't it? It's almost become a crop now, dog breeds. And I know with our latest girl, they were just going to be shot, which is that happens to an awful lot of litters. Whoever breeds them, they might think, well, it's worth their while to breed a whole litter to get the money for selling one, because it's cost them nothing. They're fed on bread, sort of soaked in water, and that's it, and they're left in a barn to rot if they don't sell, and if they do sell, well, they've made their money, and then they do it all over again. And our girl in particular, clearly her mother was taken away as soon, if not sooner, than was necessary, probably to get fat and then breed again. And so there's no sort of maternal stuff gone into her. So that's another issue that you can have with her. The whole thing is mad and sad. And I do feel very sorry for vets having to deal with the fallout of this. And I know we recently, some people asked us to help with a large bully type.
Yeah.
And it was a breed specific, but ultimately wanted to rehome this dog. Nobody would take it. Nobody. All the rescue centres are full. You know, there's dogs being put down left, right and centre. You can't get in. So what do you do? You've got this dog that you're actually worried by because it's got so big. It's not, you know, all dogs really, you should train them, start training them the moment you get them. And these big guys, they grow so quickly. You know, yesterday you could hold them on the lead. The next day you can't, and by the third day they're virtually putting you down the street, and that's dangerous.
Yeah.
So they grow so quickly, but there's still a lot of them.
Well, it's never advisable to have that sort of dog as a first or second dog. Really, I mean, I once did have a mastiff, an English mastiff, very big, and was the size of a full size Labrador at about 8 weeks. I mean, just extraordinary. But the trouble is, very soft bones, so you have to treat them with caution, not let them go upstairs. There's all sorts of things attached to that sort of thing. So, I mean, it's kind of a specialist thing, but I'm just thinking that anybody wanting to get a dog these days, really, the only thing I can think really is go to a rescue centre first. Don't encourage the breeders to sell direct, because you never know quite what you're getting, do you?
I know.
Unless you're going to a legitimate one.
Exactly. And then what are the legitimate ones? It is so tricky. And people will be screaming, so we've got awesome. There are some absolutely fabulous breeders out there, and they've been doing it for decades. And a good breeder is a breeder that will be on the end of the phone for you whenever you want.
Yeah.
Will always take your dog back. Any age, even if it's 13 years old, a good breeder would say, yes, I'll take your dog back for you. You know, they'd give you so much advice. But it's when you don't get an answer at the end of the phone, or they get a bit stroppy with you, you know, they've got your money, etc.
Yeah.
So it's so expensive. Anything you know, from the dog world now, it's just getting more and more. Insurance, again, with these big breeds, a lot of it, are you even going to be able to insure them? So you've got these ones.
I'm guessing you are, but you're going to pay a fortune in vet fees, which is where we're headed off to now, which is to do with all of this, that you've got your dog. And, well, a lot of these vets have been bought up by conglomerates now, or corporate entities, which means that somebody at the top end is getting their whack of things, which means that you're paying rather more for your care for your dog than you should do, unless of course you've got your dog insured, which I'm guessing is what these big companies want.
They do, yes. It's like anything. Again, whether it's your car or anything, it all seems to fall, or your house, it all falls under the same umbrella, doesn't it? It's all about insurance and lots of money going out your pocket for very little comeback. And the dog insurance is just going up and up. Any excuse, it goes up. If you've got anything that's slightly tricky, you're not going to be able to insure it. Third-party insurance is a must. But a lot of we meet people that, even coming to training where they've put their best foot forward and thought, you know, I'm going to train the dog, even these people are not insuring their dogs nowadays because it's so ridiculous.
Well, I've got to say, I don't. But here's the example I have to give you. We were with one particular vet, and we've got an old dog who is having a certain medicine for just to relieve the pain a little bit. This medicine was at £96 for it's a large bottle of this stuff. This is obviously because it's all private. They went to put the price up to £112. That if I go to the local vet that is not involved in these conglomerates, is about £70. And if I go online, you can get it about £22. So you think someone somewhere is making some money. This is a racket. And I'm thinking the whole thing to do with dogs, the legislation to do with dogs and the care of dogs, needs some serious investigation.
Well, it's going off the rails in so much as the people that actually want dogs as companions, because they, you know, they love the bones of them. We do. We love the bones of dogs. I love owning dogs, but it's getting more and more stressful. We meet people that actually find going for walks stressful now. And I met a girl last summer who'd had German Shepherds her whole life. And she that day on the beach, she came over and said hello to my guys. And I said, oh, have you not got a dog? No, I've had German Shepherds for years. Are you going to get a note? She said, do you know, she said, the last couple of years of owning dogs, I found so stressful and people so rude and their dogs so out of control that it would stress me going for walks. And she said, now I haven't got a dog, but I can go for walks and I'm really quite chilled out about it. And we're hearing more and more about that because it shouldn't be like that. You should be having a dog because, again, it's the company, it's because you want to walk, you enjoy them, and they are the most fabulous creatures. But I think the shine is being taken off them because of the cost of them and all these other things that keep sort of tipping up. And as you say, the expense of them. And when these small vets are being taken over by big companies, everything gets pushed up. And I don't think the vets, hearing what we hear about, I don't think the vets are particularly happy themselves.
No, they're not. They're not. But it leads on very nicely to the final bit of the conversation this morning, which is to do with something that you either get from the vet or you get from a pet store, ticks and fleas and worming treatments. And the advice coming from vets these days, certainly the corporate vets, is that the stuff you buy in the pet shop is not as good as the stuff that they prescribe.
Well, again, there's a lot of evidence to suggest now a lot of the big name brands, the ticks and fleas, have just become immune to. So I think it's a bit like sort of paring back on some of this stuff and trying to go for the old-fashioned approach, which is just brush and comb your dog. If it's got, you know, there are fleas out there at the moment already. I don't think they've ever gone away. I found, you know, this afternoon I was messing about with my guys doing nails and such, and I thought I'd just lift an ear flap up with the new young dog. And blow me, there's this tick walking down the inside of the ear.
Oh,
and I got quite a shock. So I took that off. Thank you very much. And you think, and she's been, she's not like she's run into the undergrowth today. She's had a lead walk today. So this tick has appeared from wherever. So they are out there. I think you just have to be, they are, you know, all these things are expensive. The dogs are becoming immune to them. It's not doing their bodies much to be assaulted by lots of chemicals and such, but sometimes there's no other way. Lots of grooming, washing as well, but not over washing. Whatever you do, there's a good and bad point. We use a chemical worm. It's not a chemical, it's a natural worm, and it's called diatomaceous earth. Which is it's an ancient it's algae, and it's all ground up, and they ingest that. We pop, it's very light, and they put a sprinkle on their food, so that's good for internal pests and such.
All right.
And then externally, if you have any little things living on your dog, you can actually dust them with that, or you could, if you had a tick, you could sprinkle that on it. And it's such fine, sharp stuff, because all these little creatures are ectoskeletons. It lacerates the ectoskeleton, and then they just die off.
Yeah.
So it's probably the most effective and most natural way.
Okay.
It might look like if somebody came around, somebody was on drugs the whole time, because there'd be these little piles of white powder. But if you can get around that bit, I think you'll be fine.
Okay, Wendy, we've run way over time, but it's okay. We will continue the story of ticks and fleas and worming and that, because we've only just touched the surface of that one. I think we'll come back to that in a month's time. But for now, thank you for joining us this morning, and we'll catch up with you again in a month's time. Wendy Claxton, thank you.
Thank you, Tony.